And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you as training camps are in full swing here, Buck. It's nice. I don't even know how to explain how nice it is to hop on Twitter and just see your timeline just littered with notes on players and call your buddies, and you're not, you know, trying to talk about the weather or how your bushes or your trees are coming in the backyard. You're actually talking about football, man. It's a great time of year.
It is a great time of year, and I decided to be a little more active because you talked about the timeline having so many nuggets in video and those things where we're seeing these players that, man, we forget about how good they were when they were prospects. It's been such a long time since we've seen these guys. And so hearing some of the reports on some of the rookies, some of the younger guys that are appearing to turn the corner, it's exciting because, really, when it comes to the NFL, football is definitely back. And I'm more optimistic now than ever that the season is going to go, and we're going to be excited about what we see.
Yeah, we've got some topics to cover today. We're going to hit on some of these second-year quarterbacks, what to expect from them, as well as we're going to touch on a top five list that you just recently posted on NFL.com, which is it's a really, really great topic, which is a GM-coach combination, which teams have the best combination of the two. So the top five list, we'll get to that here in a minute. But I want to start off, Buck, by just kind of some things that you're seeing around the league and talking to folks and what you're hearing. One of the things I thought was fascinating is I feel like – you ever feel like there's lessons that you need to relearn over and over again, even though it's like, why didn't I learn this the last time? But yes. We've been talking about on here for years about the importance of route runners versus just the pure speed guys. So when I'm talking to guys around the league and I'm trying to find out who's doing well, who's shining, all in the names – we talked about Bryan Edwards the other day, right?
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson, yes. I was told, like, this is like a fish in water. Like, he is – it is – he picked everything up immediately. Like, he's plug and play. And we've said – I've gone on record and said I think his production will be greater than Stephon Diggs had last year. I think he'll surpass that. He's ready to go right now. And then you hear reports about Van Jefferson. You know, you can see the Rams on Hard Knocks. But Van Jefferson's doing well. What did we say about him? I don't know. He's just the best route runner at the Senior Bowl. Like – hello, like we this is the same every year with these guys.
It is unbelievable how that kind of works itself out. And I think the thing about both of the guys that you mentioned, both Jeffersons, Justin Jefferson going to Minnesota, when he landed there, we were like, man, that is a perfect pick. Not only because of how he plays the game, his ability to play multiple spots. When you talk to people at LSU, how they talked about, like, he was really the alpha dog, the number one receiver. He did everything, could learn everything. But then you pair him with Gary Kubiak, who I believe is one of the best play designers when it comes to creating big play opportunities for wide receivers. Watched him in Houston do it for several years. Andre Johnson, Kevin Walter, these guys getting big gains, averaging robust yards per catch averages because he creates these things. And to see him now have an opportunity to get two guys, Adam Thielen and then Jefferson, with a strong running game built around Dalvin Cook, I think Kirk Cousins is going to have plenty of big play opportunities to work those guys on the outside. And then Van Jefferson, I think the Rams have the perfect wide receiver room in terms of their mentality and makeup. Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Van Jefferson, all those guys are kind of similar in terms of their DNA. Pros, mature, outstanding route runners, versatile in terms of being able to play multiple spots. Eric Yarber, Yarbs is a great wide receiver coach for them. I just think these guys are going to be able to hit it and hit the ground running, and Van Jefferson just fits. It works. Obviously, his dad, Sean Jefferson, being a well-established wide receiver coach, he comes ready to play from day one.
Yeah, I just think it's funny that we talk about this every year, and then when the draft rolls around, we see some of these guys get passed up by players that just, you know, ran a little bit faster, and I think that's a big mistake, man.
I think it is a big mistake, and it's funny because I did this thing with Cameron Dantzler. The buzz out of Minnesota is also about him playing, and I remember very early on, I liked his game on tape. Even though he was skinny, I liked the way that he challenged people at the line. I thought he had ball steals and instincts and awareness, but then he goes to the combine, and sometimes, DJ, it's hard to get a 4.64 out of your mind at cornerback. And even though we can talk about, like, hey, make your things on the tape, but man, when that number comes across the screen and that number is on the card, it just sticks, and you just worry. And I think sometimes with these guys, we tend to forget how good they were when we watch the tape compared to how they were able to work out at the combine. And then without pro days, he never could make amends. He never could make up for the slow time and the disappointing showing.
Yeah, it's when you flash forward, it's interesting because now you're thinking about if you're more of a track guy than a football player, and now if you're a Big Ten or a Pac-12 player, now you have 8 months to basically train for a 40.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to set itself up for some people to fall in love with guys that can't play. That would scare the tar out of me.
Yeah, no, it really would scare me a lot in terms of those guys that don't play the final season, but they do go work out and they're prepared to work out because unlike any time, these guys will be more prepared for the combine and different things. And so we haven't talked about it, but if I'm a scout, if I'm an executive, especially if you have the opportunity to do private workouts, I'm going to do something that they've never seen. I am going to be so off the script when it comes to going through individual drills, going through like the position part of the workout, that I am trying to really get them out of everything that they prepare for so I can get a true assessment of their skill development, where it is, and their overall athleticism, because they're going to knock the combine out the water because that's what they do. They know how to run the 40. They know how to do all those drills or whatever. But I'm really going to have to challenge them differently when I get the one-on-ones and the private workouts to see if I can really assess where they are.
You remember the panic last year at the combine when they introduced all those new drills a week before and those guys had all been training for another set of drills? And I remember we had the sled out there, which got pulled after the first group. But I mean, that was panic when they changed things up. I actually think that's what we should do at the combine is they shouldn't know what all these drills are.
It should be a surprise. And I would say, like, I don't want to go back to yesteryear, but DJ, I remember going to Indianapolis and not really knowing what was taking place. Like back in the mid-90s, you had no idea. It wasn't broadcast on TV. All you could get were stories from your old teammates who had been there previously, and they couldn't fully articulate what you were about to experience. And so it was, I would say, more of a pure testing, a truer evaluation and gauge of who you are as an athlete, where your skills were. Now, because it's been on TV and broadcast, it's become a show. Everyone knows exactly what it is. So you do have to sprinkle in some new things to throw guys off their game to get a better assessment on where they are.
What else are you hearing about anybody around the league right now, Buck? Any other nuggets?
Yeah, so how about Mike Gesicki from Miami? Look, he had a really solid second year. Five touchdowns, but they're talking about how he could be a really dominant red zone player. We know it. His background as a college, as a high school volleyball player, a guy who has tremendous hops, not necessarily your classic tight end, but a guy that we viewed as kind of a mismatch player because he has that ability to run down the seam. He has tremendous bounce and can out jump defenders down the field. In the red zone, it certainly makes sense for him to be a more viable option to target down there because you can throw it right up under the goalpost and let him out jump those guys. He is beginning to kind of put it together. We saw it in year two, but year three is when you really see guys separate themselves. He could be a guy that kind of goes into another category this year.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, athletic tight ends like Gesicki, how about somebody that's got to cover him? And from everything I've heard, it's very early on. But when you look at Simmons there with the Arizona Cardinals, Isaiah Simmons said coverage wise, he's been outstanding. And when you're in that division, think about the money that George Kittle just got. We talked about that when he was picked, being able to have somebody like that to match up. And I look at this Arizona defense. I feel like we're both kind of bullish on the team and we're both sky high on Kyler Murray and with DeAndre Hopkins over there and Cliff Kingsbury, what this offense is going to look like. This defense now, when you start looking at having a healthy Patrick Peterson, having Buda Baker is one of the best young secondary defenders in the league. Now you throw Isaiah Simmons with his speed and versatility. You got Chandler Jones, who's one of the premier pass rushers in the NFL. Are we crazy for buying as much stock in the Arizona Cardinals as we are? Because I think this is going to be a really good football team.
I think so, too, because the other thing that you're hearing is Kyler Murray is really settled in. Year two, not only his mastery of the offense, but the connection that he has with the wide receivers, particularly the budding connection that he has with DeAndre Hopkins. Getting DeAndre Hopkins was a huge acquisition for the Cardinals because it gives them a younger, number one receiver. Larry Fitzgerald is still a very productive player, but he's more of a compliment, obviously, this stage of his career. To have DeAndre Hopkins that can come in, he can fill the role as the number one, he can grow with Kyler Murray, it really repositions Christian Kirk to go back to being a natural number three receiver. I just like this offense. If this offensive line can hold up with Kenyon Drake being able to run the ball and they can just take a little bit of the pressure off of Kyler Murray, I absolutely believe that they can compete because they competed very well within the division. This is going to be a knock 'em, sock 'em. I mean, just a division that is, I think, very competitive. And I think they have an opportunity to be right in the mix.
You know how they say if you're going to take on a challenge, it's easier to have somebody to go with you on that journey, right? If you're trying to lose some weight, you get a buddy to go with you, and we try and have a competition, we lose weight together. You want to go hike a mountain, you end up getting somebody to go with you. It just makes the journey a little less stressful, and it gives you a little more courage. So I like to do right now like we did when we were kids, Buck. If you could just put your pinky up, let's just make a pinky promise to each other that we're going to stay on the Arizona Cardinals here. So, I'm saying they're a playoff team. If you want to go with me on this journey, you can stick your pinky up and we can pinky swear this thing, and we both roll with the Arizona Cardinals as a playoff team. But I'm only going if you're going with me.
Yeah, I am absolutely going with you. I am all about
it. Where's your pinky? I need a pinky promise here, man.
Okay, there it's a pinky
there
promise.
Go. Yeah,
good.
There we go.
I'm
we're good. Okay. That's all I needed. I need you to come with me on this.
I am good. I am good to go with those guys. Look, I just like what they're building. I like how it's coming together. I really like how it's coming together.
All right. Some other news. It was interesting seeing kind of the stories kind of emerge out of the Giants camp. And I think Giants fans got mad at us because of what we were tweeting yesterday. But I don't necessarily think that they understand where we're coming from here. Joe Judge, for those that don't know, he's got very much an old school approach. There's, you know, the reports out of there that he has coaches running laps at practice for mistakes. He doesn't have names or numbers on the jerseys, which, you know, his explanation for that is that they, you know, want to be able to recognize players by their body language, which I can understand. That's kind of a unique way of doing things. New England has done that where he came from. There's some of that there. But then he's big on everybody gets treated the same and there's no hierarchy and yada, yada, yada. And it, I don't know, Buck. I'm hoping we're not seeing some of the mistakes made here that have been made by other Belichick disciples, which is kind of the point we're getting at. We're not rooting against the Giants. We don't hate Joe Judge. I hope it works out. I like a lot of young players on that team. They've got some talent. But I've just seen so many times with this approach that it's just fallen flat. And all it happens is the first time you lose a couple ball games, this gets old real quick.
Yeah, I think it's something that is really, really it's a challenge for coaches coming out of the New England system, the umbrella, because it's one of those where you've seen Bill Belichick have a lot of success, 17 straight years with 10 plus wins. You've been a part of that. You've seen it work. But if it's not your personality and you're not Bill Belichick, who's able to solve all the problems, I don't know if it works. And let's be clear. You can be a tough, hard-nosed coach. You can have tough practices. Mm-hmm. You can be an old-school, blue-collar, physical team. However, you have to be careful to not go over the line. Like we talk about demanding, not demeaning. You can demand a lot from your players. You can want them to hustle to the ball. You can want them to play to the line and all those other things. But you better be careful when it comes to embarrassing those players, because the respect as a head coach is earned. It's earned from them watching you, watching how you prepare, watching how you ready the team, and then seeing how what you say is going to happen plays out on the football field. And so Joe Judge has to run that line. And I understand early you want to set the tone and do those things. He just has to be careful that he is being true to himself and his core beliefs, as opposed to just being someone that he thinks he should be based on his experience in New England.
Yeah, I think you hit on it. I think the word is, you know, authentic. You know, I don't know Joe Judge from Adam. I've talked to him one time. So if that's authentically who you are, and players will appreciate that and they will respect that. But man, if you give lip service to there's no hierarchy, nobody's more important than anybody else, you're setting yourself up for an interesting situation to occur, because you're going to have one of your better players is going to do something and you're going to back yourself into a corner. That's why John Wooden would always say, I treat everybody fairly. I do not treat everybody the same. That was kind of what he was famous for.
You can, DJ, because I think coaching is very much, it is teaching. And Would you expect someone to teach your son or daughter math, to have them run laps around the classroom, to scream at them and to have them stick their hand out and whack them with a ruler? No. You want them to raise their level by challenging them, but challenge them in ways that are respectful. And I think Joe Judge and some of these other coaches, like we saw with Matt Patricia, we saw it happen with Josh McDaniels.
Eric Mangini, Greg Schiano, on and on.
Like, man, you have to be yourself. And that's not saying that you can't be a tough-minded coach that wants physicality and all of those things. But it's a relationship business. And being a player's coach isn't being their friend, but you better have some kind of communication skills and relationship with your players, particularly your best ones, because it's a player's game when you get between the lines. The players have to make it happen. And if you don't have that currency, if you haven't kind of invested in them, it's going to be hard for them to give you the return that you want when it comes on game day.
Yeah, look, it's going to be it'll be an interesting experiment there. Again, they've got some good young players. Dave Gettleman's actually, you know, put this roster in pretty decent shape here. So we'll see how it all comes together. It's just a different approach. I'll just leave it at that. All right, man. What else do you want to hit on, Buck, before we get to these other two topics here? We've got to talk on your list, your GM head coach list. We've got some second year QBs. Anything else around the league? I did see today there was a little report out about New England being open to a platoon situation there, a little quarterback share with Cam Newton as part of that.
Yeah, I hear that or whatever, but I fully expect Cam Newton to be the quarterback. I think the way this team is positioned and the way they want to play, and we saw trickles of how they wanted to play the last couple of years when it was the power running game, the defense carrying the way and doing it. When I entered the league as a scout in the early 2000s, that's how they won three or four Super Bowls. It was running game, defense, some select playmaking from the quarterback. I think they'll get back to that formula, and I think Cam Newton will be the driving force of that. You know, it's just a unique time because we are, like, just clamoring for stuff off Twitter or whatever, and I think those things will play out. But because we don't have preseason games, we have no idea what this is going to look like when it kicks off.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. All right, let's get to your list here. Your top five GM coach duos here, Buck. Run me through it.
You know, DJ, like, here's the thing about coaches and general managers and why they have to be in lockstep. Quickly, the general manager is always thinking about the long-term vision, how this team can be set up for success over the long term. The head coach is focused on right now. How can we get this team ready to go right now? And when I go through this, I'll just start at the top at number one. I had the Baltimore Ravens. And a little bit of this is unfair because there was some carryover when Eric DaCosta took over from Ozzie Newsome. Ozzie did that last draft with Lamar Jackson and those guys, so he left him in good shape. But what I will say is Eric DaCosta did a great job of building around Lamar Jackson's talents. John Harbaugh also ushered in a change where they completely revamped their offense around those guys. Since 2016, this team has six Pro Bowlers that they drafted. They're well positioned with some veterans to go. I think they're a team that is always respected as one of the best, and I think is carried out.
It's to me, I think that if you look at failures, if you look at regimes that fail, a lot of times when you kind of diagnose the problem, it is that relationship between those two. And I think you hit on the key point, Bucky, and that is you have to have somebody that's thinking long term, and you have to have somebody that's thinking about tomorrow. And to me, you get in trouble when you are one side or the other. You better be able to marry those two.
Yeah, you have to be able to marry it. I'm going to run through the rest of the list. So I got the San Francisco 49ers at two, John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan. The way they invested in the defensive line, the way that Kyle Shanahan has been able to take a cast of characters at running back and make it work, the way they highlighted George Kittle, it just really, really works in San Francisco. I love what they're doing. I think they're going to be a team that is around to stay for a while. Third, I have the Seattle Seahawks with John Snyder, Pete Carroll. John Snyder is not afraid to make big moves. We've seen in each of the past 3 years, they make a big trade, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but they're not afraid. Pete Carroll takes players and has a way of elevating them. Their player development model has been outstanding, which is why they've been so successful in a team that has won 10-plus games in, what, 4 out of the last 5 years? They're always there. Kansas City, Brett Veach, Andy Reid. Brett Veach being aggressive when it came to identifying Pat Mahomes, but also what they've been able to do recently, re-signing their nucleus, their core players. They've done a great job. Andy Reid puts together the vision and the blueprint and the plan. And then finally, the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, blue-collar guys, looking for blue-collar talents. They've really loaded this roster up in the way that they are built. And because of that, this is a hard-working team that gets it done, and they are well-positioned to be the team that eventually owns the AFC East.
All right, so the one, no Eagles, right? No Eagles on there?
Look, they were just below the line.
Okay.
Just below the line.
That was one I would probably would lobby for a little bit there. Obviously, I haven't been there. I know those guys really well, but I think they have a really good relationship in terms of, again, Doug worrying about tomorrow and Howie being able to worry about the future a little bit. I think they've balanced that well and had a lot of success there, a lot of consistency. But again, I think there's the fascinating thing is you've get some guys who, like Andy Reid and Brett Veach, have been together forever. You know, Brett Veach doesn't know anybody else in terms of being in the National Football League. He's always been with Andy Reid in Philadelphia and then Kansas City. You look at, you know, Doug and Howie, who have a long history together, been together for a long time. Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh is a head coach. This is who he's been with the entire time. Eric was in that number two role, so they have this long history together. And then you look at some of these other ones. I mean, I guess McDermott and Bean, another group that have been together, had a history. But then you find sometimes where you get guys who come in from different locations, have no experience together. Look at what John Schneider and Pete Carroll, them coming together and having this long, sustained success. Man, it seems like that would be the more difficult way to do it because Absolutely. It's kind of like what's behind door number two. I don't know. We'll find out when we get there. But that is fascinating to me. Some of these guys have a previous relationship and others don't.
No, the only other team that really almost got in the mix, I was going to say the Dallas Cowboys. And the only reason that held me back from doing it was Mike McCarthy. But if you look at the roster that Stephen Jones and that crew has put together.
Will McClay's done a good job.
Will McClay, they are really, really loaded. We just haven't seen what it looks like under Mike McCarthy. But I fully expect the Dallas Cowboys to be a team that we talk about as a heavyweight contender. So yeah, that's my top.
That's good, man.
Yeah, that's my top five list. But now I know you wanted to talk about some of these second-year quarterbacks making quantum leaps.
Yeah, I feel like we've kind of touched on a couple of them. With Kyler Murray talking about the Arizona Cardinals, we're all in on them. And you've talked about the fact that it looks like he's more comfortable and he's making a big leap. We're in on that one. Daniel Jones, we talked about Joe Judge. But Daniel Jones, to me, Buck, I think – you know, he exceeded expectations last year, and he's raised the bar for what the expectations are in this upcoming season. But now you're in a situation where you've got to learn new offense. You know, you got new coaches, new environment. I'm anxious to see how he does here in his second year, because I think last year, you know, you're over the line, and this year the line's been raised, so there's a little more pressure on him.
Yeah, a lot more pressure on him. And so we're just going to see what that looks like. I am curious to see what it looks like with Jason Garrett, because Jason Garrett hasn't called an offense in forever. And so is his offense the offense from yesteryear, which was very North Turner-like, vertical passing game, F-post that is featured with that tight end? You can do that with Evan Engram. But do they have enough weapons to help Daniel Jones play at that level? And then how do they incorporate Saquon Barkley? Can Saquon Barkley elevate Daniel Jones' game by being able to command a lot of attention and creating one-on-ones on the outside? But look, he's a good player. He certainly flashed when he had his opportunity. I like the athleticism. How do we utilize all of those skills to help him play at a high level this year two?
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge there for the Giants. How about Haskins? Expectations for him winning the job, first of all, and what you expect to see from him?
You know, here's the thing with Dwayne Haskins. By all accounts, when you talk to people there, he has really matured and improved as a leader. He's become a more diligent worker. His body looks a little different. He doesn't look as fleshy as maybe he looked as a rookie. And when you see the clips, the one thing that is undeniable, he has big-time arm talent.
Oh, yeah.
He can spin it. He can throw it. When you get there, and like I've seen some of the clips between him and beside Kyle Allen, it's not close in terms of just the talent. It's just a matter of, was he mature enough to handle responsibilities to come along with being QB1? And I'm optimistic that he is going to be there. I don't know if they have enough weapons for him to succeed. He has Terry McLaurin, but that's about it. I know they drafted Gandy Golden and those guys, but he needs more around him. And so, unfortunately for him, he's going to have to do more with less. But this is a team that is going to try and lean on the running game, the defense, cut the store down, and maybe he can make a couple of plays over the top of the defense to McLaurin.
Yeah, he's going to have a hard time with the offensive line. I just don't think they're very good in front of him. That to me is a big concern. But I did see with the Washington football team. Gosh, it's going to be a while before I get used to saying that. The Washington football team. Your guy Bryce Love is popping a little bit out of camp. It's nice to see him healthy again.
Look, man, really nice to see him healthy because he had a long time to really rehab and get himself going. And so I think this is an opportunity for him to show people. And look, the Darius Geis situation is unfortunate, but when you have missteps, you create opportunities. And so Bryce has an opportunity to step in and kind of be the guy that we saw at Stanford. And remember, it's been 2 years since we've really seen him fully healthy because his last season at Stanford, he was nicked up, and we didn't see him last year. But if he's able to kind of dust off some of that old magic that we saw during that special season at Stanford, he could be a big-time player for them.
All right, Drew Lock with the Denver Broncos is kind of, I feel like the hype machine is really has really taken off on him. I mean, because you look, I love what they've done with the skill positions around him. But when you kind of look a little bit closer at this football team, when you have Juwan James opting out, who's your starting right tackle, and you've got Damar Dotson at right tackle, you've got Garrett Bowles, who played better last year with Mike Munchak coaching him up. He improved. But still, Buck, I mean, if you want to push the ball vertically down the field, you've got the guys to do it in terms of skill players, but can you hold up and protect? That, to me, is my concern there with Drew Lock.
Yeah, no, I think that's a legitimate concern. They've given him weapons on the outside. I think the one thing that could help him is Pat Shurmur may be able to work around some of those challenges and issues up front just by play design. A little more commitment to the running game, the outside zone run with Melvin Gordon and Phillip Lindsay kind of sharing the load. That could help. But ultimately, they will need to protect him. He did do some good things down the stretch, but you're right. The hype machine is working overtime. I really like the kid. I like the prospect. But a lot of question marks for that offensive line. But I believe that he will be able to kind of work around it because I believe he has an upgrade in play caller. That is going to help him play better.
And we talked about Stidham and our belief that Cam's probably going to be the starter. But I think it's still, he's still got an opportunity there. And if they want to bring Cam along slowly, they don't want to, rush him to get out there before he's totally comfortable with this new and set up a new system. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a little bit of Stidham, at least early in the season. But they seem to really like. We know the kind of ability he has, and I think he's got a chance to be their long-term starter. But I think he'll probably have to wait his turn behind Cam.
Yeah, he's going to have to wait his turn because I think from a talent perspective, Cam is a superior talent. Cam has experience. And everyone is saying that New England is going to take a step back. I believe Bill Belichick sees something that gives him an opportunity to be different. Cam Newton's unique skill set after watching guys like Lamar Jackson begin to create problems, the problems that they had with Deshaun Watson, guys that were mobile and athletic. I think there's a part of Bill Belichick that wants to tap into that athletic quarterback and see what they can do to kind of add some juice to the offense. Cam Newton gives them that. Jarrett Stidham will have to wait his turn.
Can I give you a conspiracy theory, psychological warfare, Bill Belichick conspiracy theory? Is that you lose the all-time great quarterback in Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, the GOAT. So now you've got Jarrett Stidham, who maybe your coaching staff really loves, but you're trying to sell him to the locker room a little bit, that he's the guy. Well, he's kind of just been handed the position, so he's not really going to get that immediate respect. Well, oh, I know what we'll do. Let's go find a former MVP in Cam Newton. We'll bring him in here, and we're going to set it up, and then we're going to have our guy beat out Cam Newton. And then now all of a sudden the locker room's like, this guy just beat out the former MVP of the league. Like, maybe he is legitimate. That is my wild, crazy, not true, but just a fun theory there on Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, it's a nice theory, but I have a hard time believing that is going to play out. And I like Jarrett Stidham, and I think Jarrett Stidham would have been a fine starter, but I think Cam is different. If we just go back to our draft grades and how we felt about those guys coming in.
A little different.
Cam is, it's a little different. So I think Cam gets first bite at the apple. Now, can he retain the job? That would be on him. I think it'll take a few more years before Jarrett Stidham steps into the mix and becomes a guy.
You don't want to buy into the conspiracy theories. Okay. No. All right. Let's last one here. Gardner Minshew, man. We list all these guys out. He plays well as anybody on this whole list.
Look, man, Gardner Minshew is a guy, the ball comes out really quickly, does a great job of mastering offenses in a quick fashion. You think about how he bounced around from East Carolina to junior college to Washington State and all that other stuff and being able to kind of make his way. But in Jacksonville, he stepped in and he does a good job of getting the ball out to the playmakers on the perimeter and letting them go to work. Jay Gruden should find comfort in him because he kind of reminds me of the quarterbacks that Jay Gruden has had success with in the past, Andy Dalton, the Kirk Cousins, those guys. I think this will give Gardner Minshew an opportunity to kind of step up and really own the job, which is something that I don't know if many of us expected when he was a 6th-round pick last year.
No, Buck, when I look at Minshew, and we said this last year, he reminded me of a guy that you know very well in Jake Delhomme, which, you know, you might look at Jake Delhomme throwing shorts and say, okay, we can replace him, we can get somebody better. But all he does is get out there, find a way to make plays. His teammates love him, they rally around him, and you can win a lot of football games. I mean, you saw Jake Delhomme take a team to the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yes, I saw it. Saw it with my own eyes. Now, it took a Herculean effort from the defense, Steve Smith, Musi Muhammad, and those guys to make it happen. But we absolutely went to the Super Bowl with Jake Delhomme as the quarterback. So, yeah, it can happen. You need everything around him to be okay. But Gardner Minshew has proven that he can win some games, and he's talented enough to get it to playmakers. I'm curious, does Jay Gruden have the ability to build a running game around him that will support him enough to alleviate some of the pressure so he can be kind of a complimentary player as opposed to the driving force of the offense?
Yeah, but man, the league changes fast. I mean, we went from them being kind of set up for a dynasty run, right? When they were this close to knocking off the New England Patriots and all this young talent they've accumulated, and we're thinking, man, the Jags getting ready to go on this whole run. And then here in a short couple years, Buck, it's been a full reboot, and there's no expectations on this football team.
No expectations, but I think they do have an opportunity to be better than they think. It just depends on Doug Marrone. He's able to put his stamp on it because Coach Coughlin is no longer hovering over top, so he gets to actually run his own program and do it the way that he sees fit. We'll see if he's able to get some dubs.
All right, Buck. Well, inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL launched the NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities through exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your choice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. Did you have a chance to see Hard Knocks last night?
Man, I did, and I enjoyed it, man. It was great. Like, here's what I like about Hard Knocks. It takes us behind the scenes, so we got a chance to learn about all the testing and stuff in week one. This week, we got a chance to see them get on the field. We saw the difference between walkthrough tempo and live action in terms of being able to put the helmets on. And here's what I will say. I like the way that both coaches own their leadership styles. When I look at Sean McVay is energetic. He is into it. He is enthusiastic. He wants to go. He wants to push the pace. And that's how he calls the game on Sundays. And when I see him lead them in practice, that's what he expects. Anthony Lynn is a little more deliberate, a little more cerebral in terms of how he wants to go about it, but he is a tough-minded guy, and you can see that he is kind of the pro's pro when it comes to the way that they're preparing. I think both styles work because they're authentic to both coaches. I can't wait for the season to kick off because I'm looking to see which one of these guys is able to get their team back, because both of them were a little disappointing last year. Yep. Which team is able to bounce back and kind of get back on track?
Yeah, trying to find their mojo there. I have not seen the episode yet. I'm looking forward to checking that out here in the next couple days. And I want to encourage you guys to check out the Hard Knocks podcast hosted by our buddy Peter Schrager. He's got Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams, on this latest episode. Also, you can see Hard Knocks TV show each and every Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. So be on the lookout for that podcast with our buddy Peter Schrager. Encourage you to check it out. Also want to encourage you to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to drop some questions on there for us if you have them. And again, continue to add to our list of the greatest high school football player you've ever seen. So put it on those reviews, and we kind of are collecting those. And it's been a fun little project here, Buck.
Absolutely. It's been fun. Make sure you guys stay engaged. Leave us reviews. 5 stars, yep. No 4 stars.
Yeah, no 4 stars, man. Only 5-star players here. All right, that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it very much. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.